Well, welcome to the Adventist Forum today. Today's program is related to some of the things that are happening in our country now. Who will Adventists vote for? Results from the 2016 Adventist Religion and Public Issues Survey. And we have three presenters. Curtis Vanderwall, who is based locally here as chair of the Department of Social Work at Andrews. And two of his colleagues from Washington Adventist University, John Gavin, who is chair of the social work department there, and William Ellis, a social scientist there. After our presentation, as usual, we'll have a discussion time moderated by Alyssa Williams, our chapter vice president. And as we get started, Dr. Dwayne McBride is going to offer a word of prayer.
Heavenly Father, that our country faces such crisis major issues this next month. Leadership, issues that we'll vote on, congressmen, representatives at the state and every level. We pray for insight and wisdom and faith and trust in you. Be with us in this meeting. Help us understand what you would want us to know and to act as you would like us to act. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Our next forum program is on November 12, when Dr. Sten LaBianca will present Welcome to the Anthropocene, a brief history of how we humans have managed to overwhelm the Earth's natural processes. And some of you may notice that that's a rescheduling from his original date when he had to be out of the country. And so we're going to do it on November 12. The following week, November 19, Rachel Williams Smith, who is chair of the Communications Department here at Andrews, will be presenting on the topic Toward an Understanding of Religious Extremism. And I want to give a couple of minutes here to Gary Burdick to talk about the program that's not a forum program, but one I think the forum people will be interested in next week.
Yes, next weekend is our annual Andrews Autumn Conference on Religion and Science. This year we've brought Michael Gulker, the president of the Colossian Forum, and two other guests, Daryl Falk and Todd Wood. They are both evolutionary biologists. One of them believes that the universe is about 6,000 years old. The other one believes that the Earth is a little bit older than that. But they are both evangelical Christians. And so rather than having the normal debate format where each person stands up and says, this is why I believe what I believe, and this is why you should ignore the other person, it's going to be a little bit different in that these are two friends. Any of you have seen the Christianity Today cover article from 4 years ago that had the two on the cover? This is a continuation of the course that brought their lives together 4 years ago. Since then, they have become close friends. They have not changed each other's opinions, but they both have grown and matured, and so we will have them on campus. So Friday night, University Vespers at 7:30, Michael Gulker is going to talk about the history of the Colossian Forum and lay the groundwork for the discussion. And then Sabbath morning at 9 o'clock in the Biology Amphitheater, we're going to have the presentations by Todd Wood and Daryl Falk and the discussion that arises from that. So come join us 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Biology Amphitheater next Sabbath.
Thanks. By the way, if you're not getting email notifications and would like to, there are some sign-up sheets in the back. And as usual, we're thankful to Terry and Debbie and Jim and Kathy and all the other people who work behind the scenes to help our programs come off and continue. Seventh-day Adventists have had a somewhat ambiguous attitude toward participation in government affairs. On one hand, you probably all have friends or acquaintances who are so opposed to involvement in partisan politics, as it's called, that they've even refused to vote. On the other hand, Adventists do have a long history of advocating for certain causes, particularly abolition of slavery, the protection of religious liberty, and prohibition. on the issue of abolition of slavery and later regarding prohibition, Ellen White, one of the founders of our church, was particularly outspoken. Just a couple of quotes to give you the flavor. "There is a cause for the moral paralysis upon society. In our favored land, every voter has some voice in determining what laws shall control the nation. Should not that influence and that vote be cast on the side of temperance and virtue?" And at the Iowa camp meeting in 1881, she asked the rhetorical question, "Shall we vote for prohibition?" "Yes, to a man everywhere," she replied. "And perhaps I shall shock some of you if I say, if necessary, vote on the Sabbath day for prohibition if you cannot vote at any other time." Well, in our program today, we have three Adventist social scientists who will be examining Adventist attitudes today toward public issues and political candidates during the current U.S. election cycle. Curtis Vanderwall, who I think most of you are familiar with, is chair and professor of social work here. He's been at Andrews since 1990. He's also associate director of the Center for Policy Research at the Institute for Prevention of Addictions. The majority of his research is focused on substance abuse treatment and prevention, social capital, faith-based ministries. He's on the editorial board of the journal Social Work and Christianity. He's a member of the board of directors at Riverwood, the county mental health authority for Berrien County. And before coming to Andrews, he was himself a mental health counselor here in Michigan. His degrees in social work and are from the University of Michigan, and his PhD from Case Western. John Gavin, who is chair of social work at Washington Adventist Hospital, at Washington Adventist University in Tacoma Park. He is also director of the Center for Metropolitan Ministry. He received his degree from the same place the current president of Andrews University received hers, Catholic University of America. He's been executive director of voluntary agencies active in disaster, the North American Director of Adventist Development and Relief Agency, ADRA, and the National Director for Adventist Community Services. Our third speaker is Dr. William Ellis. He's also from Washington Adventist University. He's a senior social scientist and public policy analyst with major experience in government, industry, and higher education. He has served as a senior staff member of the House Committee on Homeland Security. So don't do anything suspicious. A senior specialist in the Congressional Research Service. He was acting director of Science Resource Studies Division of the National Science Foundation and was associate librarian for science and technology information at a small library in the Washington area, the Library of Congress. He's held tenured faculty positions at Howard University, the University of Michigan, and Northwestern University. And some of his recent research has focused on the religious views of Seventh-day Adventist academics. He holds a PhD in Government and International Relations from New York University and a BA in Government from Oberlin College. So with that sort of extended introduction, we'll say welcome and turn the time over to you all. And who's going first?
Okay. I guess I'm going first. Thank you for that introduction and thank you for inviting us. I'm pleased to be here with my two colleagues and share with you some of the things we've been working on lately. I appreciated the historical introduction because I think this stuff is merely interesting unless we place it in some kind of context in terms of where we've been. And so this is our introduction. I'll read through. The questions of religious and social identity are deep and abiding. Who are we? Where are we going? These are not only religious questions, but social and political questions. They're particularly important questions for Adventists and Adventism and offers a challenge to modern culture in the Earth's last days and faces a challenge in its witness on important social and political issues of the day. An understanding of the social and political Adventist is key to facing this the theological challenge and to shaping our ministry expression or engaging corporately to create a place that is more just and meets the needs of all within society. So that's kind of our view as we dig into this, the research. So I want to share with you quickly through the methods and the demographics. In March, we sent a survey, an invitation to a survey to Adventist Today readers. In May, we sent a similar survey invitation to a list of pastors maintained by Advent Source. And between the two, the total responses were 615, 441 Adventist Today readers, and 174 pastors. This is sort of part of a series now, including our 2012 survey of Adventist College faculty and staff. We were here almost exactly 4 years ago talking about that study. And of course, that builds on the very fine work that Dudley and Hernandez have done in 1984, which resulted in the book you're probably familiar with, and their 2004 study, and then 2008, Roger Dudley did a study of college students and these kinds of things. I want to mention quickly the new project we started, and that's we're taking all of these studies and we're going to do a meta-analysis of them and see what that tells us about the Adventist political persona. The demographics, we have compared the two groups. Most were born in the U.S., they're mostly male, and I said mostly married. I think they're completely married, but most of them are married. I don't know what mostly married means. Broader age range, there's a broader age range in the pastor's group. And within the pastor's group, about a third are age 36 to 50, and more than a third are age 51 to 65. And in the Adventist Day readers, more than half are 65 plus. Income and education, both groups have a majority of individuals who make more than $50,000 a year. A majority of the pastors make between $50,000 and $75,000, probably due to the way the denominational pay scale is, which is largely the same except for some adjustment for cost of living. One quarter of the Adventist Today readers make under $50,000, and greater one-third make more than $100,000. And given the incomes, we see that both groups are well-educated. The pastors are clearly middle class, and the Adventist Day readers have enjoy the top socioeconomic status. We don't have education data for the Adventist Today readers, and
that was my fault.
We were going to say due to some mishap.
Exactly.
It was a clerical mishap that we fixed partway through, but not enough to get a very strong indication. This is also true for the ethnic background. We only have for the pastors group. More than half are white Euro-American, yet a range of ethnic backgrounds. Nearly the same number of Hispanic and Black Americans. The other research shows that the demographic of pastors seems to represent the pastors in the United States, except the Blacks are represented about 5 or 6% underrepresented in this group, partly due to some of the reticence with surveys and fewer overall pastors. Our African-American pastors there's fewer, and they're pastoring larger churches. A little bit about the limitations. Obviously, our demographics of Adventists are more diverse than this sample. It's not a very diverse sample. And then the weakness we just mentioned, that the Adventist Day responses does not include the level of education or the ethnic background.
All right, so let's see what we've got here. Can you hear me now? All right, what we have here is, first thing is political orientation. You see the question is, which of the following terms best describes your political orientation? And you'll see here, this is pastors versus AT readers. Amongst the pastors, we see that about 40 to 50% are strong conservatives. About the same for AT readers. Moderates, about 37% of the pastors, and on the other side, roughly a third moderate on both sides, and four in 10 are strong conservatives. And we find amongst the AT readers more liberal substantially than is the case with the pastors. Sorry about that. Okay, now, the party affiliation. And you'll see at the top there, Republicans, you have about 3 in 10 here, a little bit more than that, about 3 or 4 in 10. The Democrats, 22% amongst the pastors, and 25% or so, about the same there. And I must say, we have to talk in very general terms about this because of the limitations of the sample. So the fact that we have up here these two decimal places should not mislead you at all. These are very general kind of tendencies that we're talking about here. Independents, about a quarter of the AT readers and about a third of the pastors. Religious orientation. How would you identify yourself in regard to religious orientation? The pastors are substantially more conservative than the AT readers. You see this? And about the same number, proportion of moderates, and substantially more liberals amongst the AT readers, as is the case with the political orientation. Religious beliefs influence voting. Here we have the pastors, about 80 or 90%, about let's say 4 in 10, somewhat less for the AT readers. And that, I guess, is predictable. Here again, the importance of presidential religious affiliation and beliefs for these two groups. Amongst the pastors, roughly 7 in 10 and somewhat less for the AT readers. Do you plan to vote in November? And this is one of the things that interested us. We find over here the pastors about 4 in 5, or only 4 in 5 are going to vote, and somewhat more than that for the AT readers. Now, why would you think the pastors would be less likely to vote? Probably it's because of this heritage thing that was mentioned before in terms of what's not being involved in politics. That's what our suggestion is. If you voted Republican, here we go. If you decided to vote for one of the following Republican candidates, which one would you be most likely to vote for? And if you take out Rubio, right, then you see down here amongst the pastors, you'd see 20-35%, roughly a third, are voting for the conservative candidates, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Over here, right, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, about 37%, so that's roughly the same thing, about a third of them voting for conservative candidates. But interestingly, you have once again here, you have a few more of the AT readers voting for the more liberal candidate, which is John Kasich. If you voted Democrat, if you decided to vote for one of the following Democratic candidates, which one would you most likely vote for? And you see here on both sides, a majority would vote for, or just a slight majority would vote for Hillary Clinton. But interestingly, down here, a third, roughly, of each category would be voting for Bernie Sanders. That's interesting, isn't it? Now for Brother Carson. what we find over here is that one-third of the pastors said that they would be very likely or likely to vote for Dr. Carson. Over here, about the same, right? But very unlikely, about half of the pastors and about half of the AT readers, and then some of them not sure. So it's the same sort of pattern in both instances. But what's interesting is the two extremes. On one hand, you find both groups, about a third of them would in fact be likely to vote for Carson if he was still in it, but a slight majority or near majority would be unlikely to vote for our fellow Adventist.
And keep in mind that this is Kurt, isn't it? March for the AT survey and May for the pastors. So, you know, we could make an argument that, you know, if we would have asked them last week how they were going to vote, there may have been some shifts. But I think, Bill, in political discourse, there's some argument that people stay fairly consistent in their affiliations and in their voting patterns. Is that a fair statement?
Well, it seems to be, one thing is for sure, and that is that Mr. Trump has been polling pretty consistently between 35 and 40% overall. And they do tend to really be settling down more and more as you get toward the actual voting date. One of the things that's happened in American politics over the last couple of generations is that we have fewer people who are clearly identified as Democrats or Republicans and more people identified as independents. But what happens when you get closer and closer to the election is you get more people committed. And we think that that's what's happened here. And that's barring anything real weird, like somebody suggesting that, some of the outlandish things that have been suggested by both candidates in this election.
Thank you. One of the frustrations with trying to do this is the getting access to lists that we can use. I've done quite a bit of nonprofit work, and I spent years trying to figure out how to get lists for fundraising purposes, and now we're trying to use some of the same ideas to get lists for these kinds of surveys. And it would be nice if we had a way to do polling on a regular basis and track, and we're still trying to figure out a way to do that. One of the things that all the studies have done, and what we did here, is we took a look at, I think there were like 28 issues, and people rank them in terms of the importance of the issue to them, and this is sort of the top cut, maybe half. Is it about half of the whole list, well, anyway? And I don't even know if this survey had 28 quite. I know that some of the other studies had almost that many, but we caught most of them. And this is ranked then in order of importance to the respondents. We have everything ranging from the economy, healthcare, foreign policy, clear down to gay marriage, abortion, the environment, gun control, and taxes in the middle there. Does this ranking surprise you at all with Adventists? Is it kind of what you would think in terms of? I was a bit surprised, I think, quote, family values issues were really a lot lower on the in terms of priority for our respondents. We did get out of Pew a list of the priorities that average Americans or majority Americans how they would prioritize. And it seems very similar in terms of the top categories. Terrorism, economy, jobs, education.
Note that it's 2015, though.
What's that?
Note that it's 2015.
Yeah, it's 2015, and one of the questions we were asking ourselves is how durable is this issue? You know? So we had, in 2015, would it have changed a lot in 1 year? Bill actually had some data he brought with us that showed the trending over time, and it seems pretty stable, although I don't know with some of the unstable things going on in the campaign, it's hard to say. I did have a piece from Time magazine that I had brought, and I left it in the pocket of the seat in the airplane, and it had a kind of a flagpole in it, and it had a lot of the same issues in ranked order, maybe not as extreme in the positions or intense in the positions, and maybe not in quite the same order, but the top ranking among Americans and the top ranking among our Adventists that we surveyed shows a lot of similarity. Some of the typical social issues are less important, and we question among ourselves, is this an argument for the mainstreaming of Adventism? Are we becoming more mainstream? And I think we discuss that a little bit more a little later, I think now. And this is then we compared between the two groups what the top issues are, and they're quite similar. There's a few differences, and I think we mention them more a little later. Healthcare is at the top, the economy, education, foreign policy, immigration, a lot of the same things, and then at the bottom, gay marriage, abortion in terms of the AT readers. For pastors, those issues are a little bit higher up in their prioritization. Gun control is about the same between the two. Taxes about the same. So a lot of similarities between the two groups, a lot of similarities between the total respondents and the American public.
Out of your way. So this next slide, what we decided to do is we decided to break things out, sort of the slides that you just saw, but so that we could make the comparisons a little more clearly. So what you're going to see here is a little bit stronger set of percentages so that you can make your comparisons. We put, for the uniquely Adventist positions, we chose these six because these have been traditionally things that Adventists have cared a lot about, at least when we talk about, you know, religious liberty and some other issues. So We put these on a slide separately so that you could compare what pastors thought versus what Adventist Today readers thought. And you can see up at the top, separation of church and state, 92% strongly favor, 91%, no difference there. But, you know, despite all of the other ways that we could make an argument that Adventism is sort of mainstreaming, perhaps with some of social issues, boy, this one is really durable, and separation of church and state is not going away in terms of the issue importance. The second one that you see is maybe a bit similar in terms of conceptualization, and that has to do with expressing social and political views from the pulpit. And here, again, you won't see much difference between the pastors at 75% and the AT readers at 76%, but I think, again, what's kind of interesting is that this may reflect, again, this caution of mixing church and state or, you know, political issues in the pulpit, and so there seems to be a lot of consistency there. Now, once we get down into sort of what I call the school issues, government vouchers for schools, you can start to see a little bit more separation, and so here, if we compare this red square for 41% strongly favoring government vouchers for the pastors and only 27% favoring vouchers for the AT readers. And similarly, creation science in schools, meaning that they teach creation science, you can see 65% strongly favor and way down at 41% for the AT readers. And I think that that's kind of interesting that, again, what we might be seeing with both the vouchers and the creation science is that there's this really strong view among pastors that we need to keep some of these issues out. On the other hand, there seems to be a strong interest on the pastor's side for bringing this in because they feel that these are important. Now, this is the one that I think I had the hardest time trying to explain, and I still don't know what it means. We've got almost a split between those that are strongly opposed and those that are strongly in favor. And I wish that I could, you know, talk to some pastors about why some opposed and some favored, because if we were just consistent with the separation of church and state argument, we would think that there would be a lot of strong opposition because we wouldn't want to, you know, bring in government money. So I'm not quite sure. John, you wanted to comment.
On that, if I would, my wife's a principal of an Adventist school, and I wondered if that block represents those pastors who were struggling with the finances of their local church school. They're tough finances, you never have enough money, and if we could get, you know, temptation to get government help could be real strong, especially at some of those tough board meetings where you have to make decisions about staffing. Yeah. Just a thought, I don't know for sure. For my,
it could be a survival issue. You know, it's just, do we want our school to survive? No, yes, right. The creation science, I think, was more interesting because this one, I think, once again shows that pastors are more willing to bring these issues into the public school realm, and it's kind of an opposition to separation of church and state. So I find it kind of ironic. Maybe it's our traditional, as Carl Bailey talked earlier in Sabbath school class about cognitive dissonance, there would probably be some cognitive dissonance in the way that people think about, you know, separation of church and state, and yet we want our issue to be, you know, forwarded in legislation or in the public sphere. Now, SDA is running for public office. Here we can see pretty consistently 56% favor or strongly favor in both categories, but there's a lot of ambiguity and ambivalence. You can see across the board here about half either are opposed or just aren't sure, and I think that maybe reflects the larger ambivalence again around separation of church and state. That issue just kind of percolates through all of these uniquely Adventist issues. The final one about SDAs in the military is combatants. Strongly opposed by 56% of the pastors and about 46% of the AT readers. But again, I think the thing that just kept surprising us over and over again, and maybe it shouldn't, but the diversity of or the range of opinion. I mean, you have very conservative Adventists that would apparently be pretty consistent in their viewpoints in political conservatism as well as religious conservatism, but we've got a large group of liberals and moderates as well, and so we're definitely not a lockstep uniform church. hot-button social issues. These are not uniquely Adventist, but they're sort of the hot topics of the day. And again, the way I used the yellow blocks was to basically say these are basically the same across both categories. So if you look at environment, this one actually surprised us a bit. We have really strong favoring of protecting the environment. Joe Gregg, I think this should warm your heart. I don't know if your message is finally getting through or not, but there seems to be strong support, 83%, particularly among the pastors. Increasing gun control, you can see that's a very, very split issue. And I'm guessing what we did a little bit, but we didn't bring the data here today, is that if you were to break this down by cross-tabulations, what you would start to see is if you're conservative politically and if you're conservative religiously, you tend to have consistent positions within both of those realms. You can see here also racial tensions and police brutality was also interesting. There's a strong belief, maybe even stronger than I would have guessed, 77%, 74%, that are interested in addressing those issues. And I'm wondering if maybe part of that is that we're a pretty diverse church, and perhaps there's some hope that, you know, within the diversity of church, we would be interested in supporting these kinds of addressing or reconciliation issues. Giving illegal immigrants a chance to change their legal or to get a legal status, I thought was also interesting. Pastors were more likely to strongly favor than AT readers, but pretty strong percentages in both cases. We wondered again if, you know, our church is very much of an international church, it's very much an immigrant church. Perhaps this is reflecting the reality that we are a diverse church and we're supporting that diversity in these kinds of social policies. Universal health care coverage, you can see, again, almost similar percentages across, but almost a split. Those who are strongly or somewhat opposed versus those who favor on the same side. But this has been an issue politically that has split the country, and it splits our church as well. And similarly, the Affordable Care Act, you can also see a consistency in the repealing of the Affordable Care Act, or euphemistically called Obamacare, very similar percentages as well, although there are a few more pastors who seem to be opposed than AT readers. Now, a couple other interesting issues. The family values positions. Abortion. This one actually surprised us too. Now, you can't read the whole tag to say what these questions are, so I will tell you what they are. The first one says, abortion is entirely a woman's choice. And you can see pastors, about 14% agree with that position, and almost 40% of AT readers agree with that position. The middle position, abortion is acceptable only in the cases of rape or incest. We have almost 70% of the pastors agreeing with that versus about half of the AT readers. And then abortion is not acceptable under any circumstances, about 12% of the pastors and about 7% of the AT readers. So I thought this was a fascinating look into perceptions, and I guess I would have been surprised for that to be that high. And we do have an Adventist policy. I don't know if this policy is still an official policy, but Fritz Guy helped to write this a long time ago. And that was, while we approve of and strongly support the sanctity of life, we also know that, you know, these are very difficult decisions, and ultimately these are choices that people have to make in the conscience of their own soul, so to speak. So I don't know if that view is still the case within an official Adventist position. John, you were going to mention?
I was on the GC website and looked just within the last 2 weeks, and it's still there.
Still there.
Right,
right. The pastors haven't apparently heard that, yeah, or read that particular website. We'll send it right over to the seminary, Duane. The last family values position is same-sex marriage, and I thought this was quite interesting. The first category is same-sex marriage is, remind me of this, guys. This one is same-sex marriage is morally unacceptable.
Morally acceptable.
This is the morally acceptable one. Hold on just a second. Yeah, make sure on this one is right. Doggone it. Did you bring your handout with you?
Yeah, I probably have.
Sorry about that, guys. I thought I had everything cleanly and clearly thought through on this, and now I just realized.
I'm pretty sure it's unacceptable at the top.
The top is unacceptable.
I know that the middle one is that same-sex couples should be allowed to have civil unions. So that one I'm absolutely sure on. So about a third of the group believe that civil unions are appropriate.
No, legal.
I thought legal was first, yeah.
You're right, it is the affirmative position.
It's the affirmative position that same-sex marriage should be allowed and should be legal. 44%. Now that can't be right, John. That can't be right. That can't be right. It's got to be the opposite, isn't it? Right here.
Yeah, that's the legal. So the third one down is the.
Okay, the third one down. Okay, thank you. The third one is that same-sex marriage should remain legal and is appropriate. And this one is that same-sex marriage is morally unacceptable and should be reversed.
Right, and then civil unions in the middle.
Yeah, so pastors are much more likely to believe that same-sex marriage, the law of the land as passed by the U.S. Supreme Court, that law should be reversed. And about 30% of the AT readers believe that. The middle one, again, is that this is legal unions, and legal unions should be acceptable. I even think that is kind of an interesting position, because we've got about a third of the group that says, look, we think that it's okay, but it shouldn't be a religious decision, it should be a civil decision. So when you combine this and this together, you've got about half the AT readership that in one form or another basically says that same-sex marriage or a variation of civil union should be allowed. Now, you could talk about what that means and why it might be argued one way or the other, but I was actually quite surprised by that.
Yes, indeed, we were real surprised by that. Now, what we have here, let me have that little thing. What we have here is the beginning of trying to really bring this together and summarize it. And here we have in one column the similarities between these two groups, as you can see. In the other column, we have differences. On the top, political orientation, there is a wide range of beliefs that's thematic in here. The Seventh-day Adventist Church, we know, is not one thing. Secondly, party affiliation, there are more independents, and there are more independents in the general population than there used to be. On both sides, there are more independents. Religious orientation is conservative and moderate, typically. We know this. Influence of religion on voting behavior is high. Differences between the pastors and others. The pastors are somewhat more independent and conservative. A voting likelihood, we dealt with that already. Religious orientation, the AT readers showed a broader range of in their religious orientations. The summary of the participation, once again, in this column, the similarities, in that one, the differences. Political participation, once again, is high. Republicans choose the more extreme candidates. The Democrats virtually the same in candidate selection. And for Brother Carson, the views are similar. And most, the largest body of people really would not vote for him. President's religious beliefs are very important for pastors in the AT group. Within Republicans, they choose more moderate candidates, and for religious practices, pastors show more religious participation. Now.
Yeah, I think this is my part. Thank you, I'll take this.
Yeah,
okay, we're actually coming through quite quickly, and there'll be lots of time for discussion. So that's the summary. What does it say about Adventists? We have an enduring commitment to separation of church and state. Adventism is more diverse than this sample, said before. There's a lot of diversity within Adventist opinion. Very strong Adventist engagement in political and social issues, and strong participation in national voting. actually stronger than I would have realized. Wide range of positions, there's more independence, range of differences on party affiliation, political orientation, religious orientation. Adventist opinions seem to mirror the general society. And compared to evangelicals, Adventists tend to be less engaged and motivated by the social issues, the abortion, same-sex marriage, et cetera. So what are some implications for action?
May I say one thing, John?
Please. Wait. There we go.
Let me just say one thing about the voting participation, which we should have said earlier. In presidential election years, typically only about 50 or 52% of people who are nominally eligible to vote in the country vote. And here we have the intention, which is much higher than that amongst both categories of Adventists. It's important to recognize that.
We're the lowest in the world.
Yes, that is correct.
As a country, yeah.
As a country,
yeah.
We're the lowest.
Yeah.
That is correct.
And that's very interesting. So, what do we do with this information in terms of action? What should the church do? What should individuals do? The church can encourage voting and civil engagement. Discourage political participation, develop more social policy positions, although I've actually read most of the policy positions. There's actually a booklet, you may know, has the policies in there, and some of them say a lot, some of them fill up the whole page and frankly doesn't say much in terms of clarity, at least in my reading. Should we lobby for moral and social justice issues? And I think there's some movement on that. I know there's an effort in our area led by some of the African American leaders and churches to actually had a rally.
Yes.
on the mall.
July 9th.
Where was that? At the.
It was from the Lincoln Memorial to the King Memorial.
Yeah, so they walked from Lincoln Memorial to King Memorial. That's a fairly unique event within Adventism, I would say.
1,000 people.
Yeah, 1,000 people. Yeah, with the NAD president was there. He's a Canadian, by the way. I don't know if that matters or factors in at all. But
he's also an American, also an African.
Yeah, okay, I see. So that's, in terms of what should the church do with this, I mean, I'd like to see us get behind some of these issues and do something as a church. What should individual Adventists do? Engage in political activities like the one that Bill mentioned. March, sign petitions, lobby, make phone calls, protest, run for office. Those are some of the things. I don't know if any of you knew Roy Branson. Some of you may have known him better than I. One of the things I didn't realize until I was reading some of the tributes after his death, how much he believed in a role for the corporate church, the Adventist church as a body, in society. I never picked up that nuance in there. That I knew that he was active himself as an individual in things, including leading the non-smoking issue, which is probably one of the last things that we did in kind of a large way in terms of influence of public policy corporately. We actually had an office on Capitol Hill. When I was at the NAD, I paid the rent on that office for a few times. It was in the Methodist building. I hadn't noticed that particularly strong thing in Roy Branson's reading and talking, and I think about that a lot now, especially since he's gone. But when the role of the corporate church in America, in the issues in these last days. Questions and comments, and we're gonna try to help field those. You're gonna help with that.
I'm sure we have plenty of questions for our presenters, and if you have a question, please raise your hand and I will bring you the mic so everyone can hear you.
Hello. Okay. Well, I'm a professor here in the School of Education and Leadership program. My name is Gus. I'm surprised by the support to the Republicans, or kind of, in Carson is not accepted as a possible candidate. So in my opinion, it means like, we want to support some political activities, but not really support an Adventist candidate, you know, which is a kind of schizophrenia, you know. And I think it comes back to the idea, I don't know how to interpret that, to the idea that we are actually against this running in political.
So again, kind of question. I think you're talking about the Carson element.
You asked the question, basically, why wouldn't we support our brother Adventist, right? Because it's about the issues, not about the candidates. More about the issues than it is about the candidates. That's one interpretation. And the second point is just straight up racism, which is part of the American heritage. And it exists in this church and in some of our attitudes in it as well. And I think that needs to be confronted. But basically, it's about the issues. And it may be that people simply on the issues preferred other candidates. No, he was not running as an Adventist. That's true. But to many of us, he was running. He was an Adventist who was running. To many of us, he was an Adventist, and that was important. But not as important as the issues. Now, there have been Adventists elected to public office. There are two or three of them in the House of Representatives now. And the former mayor of Philadelphia was a Seventh-day Adventist as well, as many of you know. So people have been elected, but to me at least, it's more about the issue. Is that responsive? It seems to be more about the issues than it is about somebody being an Adventist.
What issues?
Well, the same issues we went through here.
The social, the political, the economic.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. He was too conservative for the issues that we support.
Well, he wasn't clear on the issues. I mean, you've heard some of his speeches probably.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that he did reflected as limited knowledge as some of the others had with respect to the issues, and that probably is part of it as well. All right.
Did you have some book? You'll find it's very good. America the Beautiful, the Christ Manifesto.
Yeah. I think we have a question.
Yes. Number of us know the risks of survey research anyway, but I'm wondering, I know that the AT readers were almost certainly pretty well educated. I suspect the pastors who elected to respond were pretty well educated. And I realize it's very, very difficult to get the ordinary member in the pew to even to get lists, much less to survey them. But I wonder the degree to which that affected things. You've got 80% with graduate degrees. That almost certainly is going to affect the results, at least I would assume so.
It's about the sample, and about whether or not the sample is really representative of Seventh-day Adventists. And the point is,
it's not.
Period.
It's not, and that's part of the reason why what made it's kind of prompted us to take on this other project, so we can look at the surveys, you know, over time, and see if we can get a clearer picture by looking at Adventist faculty and staff, Adventist college students, the two larger Adventist surveys that Spectrum, you know, that Dudley and Hernandez did using the through Spectrum. So, yeah.
But I think, Alice, you're absolutely right, is that, you know, education tends to do a lot of things. One is it creates more engagement in the political process. You're more likely to read. You're more likely to be, you know, observing and, being involved in a lot of different things. And, you know, despite that, there was still a pretty wide range of opinion. I mean, you could see that almost, you know, there were almost as many liberals as there were conservatives, not quite as many in the pastor survey, but the pastor survey actually surprised me that there were
group fairly.
And that is a fairly representative group of the 6,000 pastors in the U.S. Advent Source is sort of a clearinghouse for materials, and of course there's selection bias, so you can always say, well, they were self-selected, and so the ones that chose to, you know, to answer, maybe they were more likely to be of a certain background. But I think in Adventist pastorships overall, they tend to be more highly educated, more often with a master's and MDiv degree, and those probably were more likely to self-select because they might have been more interested in political issues.
Right. The other thing that I think should be clear, I'm hoping was clear, is that the commitment to the separation of church and state doesn't necessarily translate into non-participation. And I think, you know, that, because I think in the past it may have. I'm coming here, it was interesting. I was thinking about my wife's family and thinking, I wonder who's going to come, because there's a fair number of Adventists who don't think you should talk about political issues, especially on the Sabbath. So here we are. So. No, apparently not.
This is a very skewed sample as well.
Right. So, yeah, that needs to be clear. Is there another question or comment?
Here.
Yeah, over here.
Yes. I noticed that on the pastor side, the number of pastors who were overly concerned about health care was higher than for the AT readers. And I was wondering if you had any idea as to why that was the case.
In terms of the back one?
This is the one we want right here, because that gives you
the bottom two rows. Yeah. And Kurt, you did this slide. Yeah.
I'm going to go back to my thesis, which Dudley and Hernandez created, you know, 8 years ago or whenever it was that they did their first survey, or maybe it was 12 years ago, that when you do the crosstabs, you see political consistency and religious conservatism consistencies. So I would guess, if we were to look more closely, that those who were opposed to both universal health care coverage and repealing Obamacare are probably politically conservative as well. And so those two go hand in hand. Now, the bigger question is, you know, from a moral perspective, how do we talk about that, and whether universal health care is a, you know, is a moral right, and whether or not we want to make the argument one side or the other. But I think you can pretty much line up, not one-to-one, but you can often line up political and religious conservatism and political and liberal, social and liberalism together, and they track pretty well.
Excuse me.
Yeah, follow
that
up?
That was not the slide I was referring to.
Okay, which one was it? Do you want to give him the mic again for?
Right there.
So healthcare being the top?
The top versus?
Versus what? I mean, they're both near the top and similar. It's a similar, very similar ranking, but we may have missed your point, so give us another chance.
Yes, that healthcare, I mean, it ranks at 73% versus healthcare as far as the AT readers.
56% versus
62%. Okay, I missed that. I can read that. Thank you.
Forces things into slots that we're not always pleased with.
Dwayne had a healthcare related.
Well, hold on, just one question. Let me just add a footnote to that. You have to understand once again that this is not precise work.
Yeah.
And so in terms of those two things on this chart, those are basically tied.
Yeah.
Right.
I could see the first two digits. That's the best thing.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry about
hard to read.
Sorry about that.
I think, first of all, let me say I'm not at all disappointed in your presentation.
Thank you. We're hoping for your approval.
The date, guys, the date. What's the date today? Thank you. All right, just, you know, people aren't very aware. One of the things...
We covered that in Sabbath school. Where were you?
Yeah. Oh, okay, wrong class. To me, what's really interesting in these data is just the mixedness of how Adventists put things together, in the sense of strong separation of church and state, but yet, you know, and again, we had more conservatives than liberals, but, you know, but as conservatives, we really, are pretty high on healthcare. We're pretty high, and go back to illegal immigrants, the chance to be citizens, go back to that one.
About this has to do with these are issues that they think are important.
Right.
This has to do with how opposed or how much they support it.
Okay.
So if you want immigration, this is probably your line right here.
But again, you have 69%.
Yep.
And that's amazing to me, because that is a very liberal position.
Yes.
The surveys I've seen of Republicans, you have like 85% or 90% who don't want to. And so this is much more a Democrat position, but yet very few identify as liberals.
On the mercy side, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. What you really have is almost the Christianity overcomes their conservatism.
Well, this is why I'm arguing a world church argument.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
this is where we're a very much a not a melting pot church, but we're very much a diverse and wide-ranging church in terms of not only the U.S. population, but certainly the world church population. And I think there's less about borders and more about mercy, as you're pointing out.
Yeah, no, I think there is. And even the violence, you know, again, you know, most conservatives have no problem serving the military, yet those folks do.
All right, we have a couple other questions over here, so bear with me as I get to these individuals.
Just let me take an opportunity to say something about all this conservatism and liberalism in the church. The church has an image, perhaps even within ourselves, of being conservative. But one of the sort of themes in this is that it's not like that. It's not one thing.
Right.
And you're on the slide that I wanted to talk about. I'm interested in how many people, what percentage supports universal health care and also strongly favors repealing the Affordable Care Act. That's
Strongly opposed is 37%.
Right. It's the 37-48 that relate.
Yeah.
48%. Well, it looks like 48% are in favor of repealing the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, it's the same story, but yeah, you're right. That's those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. No, the Affordable Care Act is not universal health care. So you actually have a percent of the population who oppose the Affordable Care Act because they want universal health care.
Right, which is...
I had to be one of them.
Right, it's a crosstab.
Which is interesting, yeah, because regardless of what you think about it, that was the largest recent piece of legislation that increased... coverage for folks. But they're clearly split, and, you know...
Well, in any case, there's a lot of confusion about the issue.
Yeah.
And some of the former polls have suggested that on a national basis, people would say they are against Obamacare. And then you'd ask them a question later on about Medicare, and say, you better not take my Medicare away.
Well, there were even cases where people would say, look, what do you think of Obamacare? What do you think of the Affordable Care Act? And they said, I love the Affordable Care Act, but I hate Obamacare. So there's a lot of confusion. And I wondered too, what was I gonna say about that? That reflects, I think, our Adventists seem to be strong on capitalism, free market, and there's a lot of the profit motive still tied up in the whole healthcare thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway, thought over here, question over here.
One of you expressed surprise about the difference between the AT readers and the pastors on the abortion issue. Our church is very unique in being a conservative, almost fundamentalist church that does not have a clear position on abortion. And I think that's because of our medical tradition. We have a strong medical tradition in the church. Mm. And that is why I think we see the difference between the pastors and the AT readers. A lot of the AT readers are probably medical people. Adventist Today was based out at Loma Linda. Uh-huh. And I think if you would tease out how many of AT readers are in medical professions, that would probably explain the difference.
That's a wonderful observation. Yes. I'm sure we all thank you for that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Really is interesting.
I just have a question on universal health care. Would that have been understood to be a single payer system? Or just the fact that we need universal healthcare?
That was not specified in the question.
Because that would make a lot of difference, I think, in terms of the way people would respond.
But I don't really think there's any serious legislation put forward to go to single payer. I mean, there's some people say we'd like to do that, but it's not politically expedient. And
well, a little sidebar. When the president stepped forward to start the conversation about healthcare in the United States, this is beyond Mrs. Clinton for so long ago, this is this president. They held a meeting of all of the what they call loosely stakeholders. And in that room, there was only one person who stood for the single payer. And that was Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. Huh. And he's basically stood up on the table and screamed long enough so they got two more people in the room. So basically, from the standpoint of view of the administration and many others, that was never on the table with respect to this.
My question would be, if you're filling the survey out, though, would you interpret that as some way
of that's not clear. That was not in there.
But plus, it's possible. You're right. It's possible.
It is quite possible. But again, to me, because of the confusion on the issue, it would take a couple of paragraphs to explain to people what the single payer was and beyond that. And so most people, even if you put an item in here, would probably still be confused about what it is. So what you'd have to do is you'd have to get very much closer to people in some in-depth interviews or some of those group conversations and things like that in order to really understand what people's position was on that. But that's a very good question. It really is.
Interesting. I think he's right, though. I think they would assume that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I think he's right that they would assume that it would be similar.
It's possible. Very possible.
Well, they wouldn't put the, I don't think ordinary people would put the single payer tag on it. They would say, basically, if we have whatever you call it, it means that I don't get to select my doctor, that I have to wait in long lines, that it's going to be inferior care and all of that, if it gets to be universal health care. That's the sort of image that it has in the minds of many people. Once again, it's not everybody, and there's great confusion on this issue.
Yeah.
I would like you to look, maybe a little projection into the future. This is about attitudes in society towards women. Yesterday on the radio, I heard a Trump supporter say that the mainstream media was dragging that old hag across the finish line to win the presidential election.
Wonder who they're talking about.
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
And the reporter had him repeat it because she couldn't believe what he said. There's also been the accusation that since Barack Obama has been president, that there's been more racial violence and tension in our country than before, and that's an accusation of him somehow not being able to bring racial healing. And yet, when you look around, I think it's brought to the surface some of these real racial tensions and hostilities that are erupting more. So do you think, if that is true, that our first black president has, not because of him, but under his during his time as president, there's been more racial tension, more racial issues, more volatility. Do you think if under our next president, I think she's going to be a woman, are we going to start to see that sort of thing maybe towards women, more sexism and this type of behavior?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And it kind of goes, looking at the Obama part, I mean, did his election bring out more of the racism? I think clearly it did. Her being a candidate brings out the sexism. And the way the candidate has conducted the campaign helped or hurt or whatever. So I think, yeah, that's right. I'm very disappointed because I remember when Hillary Clinton ran before, there was some very unkind and ungracious things said and even joked about her. And I'd hope that the next time around I wouldn't see. This is far worse what we've heard than even back then, which was all very unfortunate. So it's troubling if that direction continues, and I'm not quite sure what to do about it. I had an idea, but I'm not going to mention it publicly.
There are two major sources of data on hate violence. One is the federal government, which is part of the Uniform Crime Statistics data. Uniform Crime Reports data has collected that as a result of the Hate Crime Statistics Act, which was passed in the 1990s. The other one is the Southern Poverty Law Center. And when President Obama was about to be elected, then when he was elected, there was a rise, in fact, in hate violence that was directed toward, principally towards African Americans, but other people as well. And then what you had is soon after he was elected, and many of you will recall this, the minority leader of the Senate, when Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, said, now our policy, our objective is to oppose everything that he is going to propose. You remember that, right?
One term.
Now, no policies in this at all. And that can only be, you know, interpreted as a personal attack with racist overtones, to be sure. Now, to me, one of the principal things that we've got to face now is that you had a lot of the hate groups basically marginalized, and they weren't really accepted in terms of the public mind and political discourse. What Mr. Trump has done is to mobilize those elements and then to legitimize them. And that is not going to go away. And that's a serious, serious problem for this country. And it has racist things in it. It has, you know, anti-ethnic things in it. It has anti-female things. That whole congeries of issues now is brought up and made salient in the American polity, even if Mrs. Clinton is elected. And that's a serious problem. Now, even Glenn Beck, who is known to some of you as a right-wing talk show host, I've not heard his program, right? But he went on the air some time ago on one of the major channels and said, look, Donald Trump is inappropriate. He's raising up all these awful things in the United States. This is a right-wing talk show host. And he said, what we have to do is those of us who are on one side, the so-called liberal side, and the other side, the so-called conservative side, who care about this country, must come together to oppose him and A, assure that he does not get to be president of the United States, and B, then to back this stuff off, because this is going to be potentially very damaging.
Beck's a Mormon. He's coming from a Mormon position.
Yes. He's a Mormon as well?
Yes. Yeah. So it's the Mormons who are leading the evangelicals in this push.
Right.
Oh, really?
That's right. I've forgotten that. I heard that.
So, you know, remember, Trump is like 25% and has never gone against Republican in decades. So the Mormons are actually standing up, I think, for core Christian values better than any other evangelicals.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay. Question here, comment?
Yeah, as far as Trump goes, I do have some concerns about him too, because if you look at the techniques that he's using and the ones that Adolf Hitler used to come to power, they are confusingly similar.
Yeah.
I think that if you look at the alternative, though, I will be voting for Trump. Now, as far as the issue of the single payer insurance and the perception of the citizens. I probably sit on the front lines and see this from a perspective, ground grassroots, because I do taxes and I interact with literally hundreds of people related to the Obamacare. And the basically, you have the government insurance, you have business insurance, and you have two classes of that. And then you have Medicare, and then the exchange, which is usually referred to as Obamacare. I've had clients who have been, for the most part, Obamacare has damaged more people than it's blessed. I mean, it's done some real serious stuff. So but from the consumer point of view, they see it as single provider. While there are a number of providers in the Obamacare, there's going to be many less next year than now. So it is moving in that direction.
Interesting comment and predictions. Yeah, thank you.
I thank you for sharing positions that you have taken and for saying straight up that you will be voting for Donald Trump. Now, this is very important in this room and in every room like this, for people to talk to each other about these issues and about what their preferences are politically, instead of isolating each other and generating sort of standoffishness from the other guys and not engaging the issues and not engaging mainly each other. Because what's happened in political discourse in the United States, as many of us recognize, is the other side is not just a different opinion, that's the enemy.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we need to talk to each other.
Yeah, I think that's important. Right here, it looks like someone wants to. Yeah, we'll come back over there, Charles. While you're getting the mic, I'm interested in what comments you might have in terms of what does this mean for the church corporately?
I don't think either of the two categories that you were able to survey would be blue collar type people.
Oh, probably not.
And
clearly not.
The my understanding is that Donald Trump's constituency is largely white males who haven't graduated from, who haven't gone to college, not exclusively, but and that the Trump base is about 38% of the total population. The Adventists who are for Trump is, looked like it was around 30%.
Like 17, I thought, but maybe I missed it. 20% for pastors.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, probably a lot lower than the general population. Now, if you had been able to survey the blue-collar type, wouldn't you probably come out quite a bit different on that?
Yeah, I don't know how to get a blue-collar list. Yeah. But yeah, it would have been different, yes. And that's why, I mean, these are qualified, and that's why we're excited about whatever we can do to look at all the studies, the series that have been done, and see if that helps us see things more clearly. I think there was a hand over here and then in the back. She's getting a lot of exercise. She'll live longer than us.
First of all, I work with social justice on all levels. I started out in the grassroots level, and I have also communicated with government officials to the to the level of the governor, and I know Representative Conyers. We brought some issues before him. And I've been watching this this whole political thing developing for more than 30, maybe 40 years from Chicago, and it's a political town. And I was groomed by the precinct captains and things like that. And we watched the deception of Mayor Daley for many years, and the fight to keep Harold Washington from becoming mayor over and above the obvious thing that he was well qualified for the job. They would have put a white dog in place of anybody. People were crossing lines just because of racial issues. Okay, people got over that when they discovered, and see, discovery is something amazing when sometimes we do things because we really don't know. And once we discover, we say, wow, this is good, we've been fighting. And what's going on, I'm trying to, this is a very deep animal to deal with, and this is why it's taking a little bit longer to get here. You have your younger generation that's, I don't know if there's a category of youth in here, or, I mean, you know, a category where you survey youth or young people.
Well, there were, the age groups were in the demographics.
Right. That's something very important, because the young people are going to, they're going to be quite an influence down the way, but yet they might not be partakers in your survey, okay?
Well, there were 18, younger category, there were, 18% between the two?
The surveys are very good because it gives you a little sample of the population, but it's just a small one. But the bigger issues...
Yeah. Yeah, there was a study that Roger Dudley did in 2008 of college students,
right?
And he had a random sample, and we've done some analysis from that article. I think I even have it here with me, that really gets the young person's point of view, and what little bit I remember, because we stopped focusing on that to this, is that it seems to be a lot of engagement. High level participation in the process, a lot of engagement, and more moderation than the larger group of Adventism.
Right.
On the issues.
One of the problems why it's so hard to pinpoint the culprit in this whole election process is because there are many culprits, okay, and some are piggybacking off of others, okay. One is the judicial system has now finally become fully corrupted, as such as the legislation, who puts into place laws that are causing more people black, red and yellow, black and white, there's no color boundary now, to become felons. And this idea of a background check has become a serious problem for survival for people, because it affects not only your living, your income, but also your educational opportunities. And all of this is why the Republican Party is suffering, because the young people and many others who are just tired of it have rebelled. And this is the only reason why Trump got in. Much to their amazement, they said, where's this guy come from? Well, he's been reading the public in the sense that everybody's disgruntled. I'm not happy with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, Charles, I want to get another perspective in here. Yeah. There was something I was thinking about along this line. And then I think there's a question in the back. Some of the young adults I've been talking to are sort of choosing the independent category,
right,
as kind of they think of it as a middle ground. Well, I don't like Hillary, I don't like Trump, I'll just choose an independent category, as if that's in the middle, when independent, politically independent doesn't mean between the two. So I know there was a hand in the back, probably we should get that question.
I did have a question as to my question is answered by this. The church has to do more of its part in the social world to bring understanding on the moral issues. The moral issues are divided between the Democrats and the Republicans, and this is why it's hard to make a decision.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I thought I saw a hand in the back. Oh, there.
I don't actually have a question so much as a comment.
Sure.
And that is, I think that part of the reason people are going for Trump, it's the only way to go against Hillary.
Well, thank you for that comment, but that's not entirely true, because there are four candidates for president.
Yeah, you will vote for the others and you get it down the toilet.
Well, now just bear with me. Yeah. Stay with me for just a minute now,
right.
Okay?
So it'll make a difference.
Okay.
Well, there are four candidates. There's Mr. Trump, Mrs. Clinton, Johnson for the Libertarian Party, and Jill Stein for the Greens, right?
Well, there are a lot more than that. And the guy used 29 parties with people on state.
Okay, but what I'm talking about is the four parties that are typical across the whole thing. You're right, there are all kinds of parties, and they're going to be write-ins, and they're going to be all kinds of things like that. But there are only four of them that are polling any percentage of the vote that really is of significance.
Except for McMullen in Utah.
Is that right? What is he, a Mormon?
He's the Mormon who is considered to be the Republican alternative.
Right.
And he's polling somewhere between 25 and 30% in Utah, right up with Trump.
That's very interesting, and I thank you for that. But back here, the only way for you to object to the two major candidates, and many of us are really dissatisfied with both of them for a whole array of reasons, you say the only thing to do is to vote for Trump if you object to Mrs. Clinton or whatever it is, right? But it is possible to vote for any of these others, most particularly Johnson and Stein.
Yeah.
Now, there's one constitutional thing that we must keep in mind. And that is, according to the Constitution of the United States, there are 538 electoral votes. How do you get to 538 electoral votes? You take for each state the total number of senators, which is two in every case, and the total number of congressmen, which varies all over the place. You total that up over the whole thing. For 100 senators and 435 members of the House of Representatives, you get 535. And then there were three votes added for the District of Columbia by a constitutional amendment some years ago. So you got 538. Half of 538 is 269. In order to get a majority of the electoral votes, you have to have 270 or more, right? That's the arithmetic. The Constitution says that if somebody comes as a result of this election, nobody has 270 electoral votes, then it goes to the House of Representatives. If it goes to the House of Representatives, it's quite likely that Mr. Trump will get to be president. And so we should all keep that firmly in mind when we look at this stuff. Now, that's off to the side somewhere, but it's a real possibility.
We have time for about two more questions, if there are any more.
Okay, comments, questions, okay.
Comments, questions.
You were so thorough. Here we go, here we go.
No, it's a question.
We'd appreciate
appreciate your comments, too,
John. Yeah, we do.
I had thought maybe there was going to be a little more discussion about how Adventists might vote in terms of percentages. Do you have data on what percentage of the Adventist church in the United States, the ethnic breakdown of the Adventist church in the United States?
We do have a profile of that. The NAD does a study, and I don't know if I have it with me here or not, but...
Because that correlates really heavily. I mean, when you look at how different groups are going to vote, we would probably get a better idea how Adventists are going to vote if we knew what percentage are African American, what percentage are female, and so on.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Do you think that it would track by ethnic background?
I don't know. Wait, that's an empirical question.
Use your mic.
Yes, that's an empirical question, and it's a good question.
Yeah.
And we regret that we may have given a tickler on the front end of this that suggested we were going to tell you how we all are going to vote. So we apologize for that, but that is not what we can do now based upon what we've got.
Yeah, the real challenge is getting a list that we can get a random sample and a diversity. Yeah.
Well, I've done once in my career a sample that.
I mean, one of the best lists of Adventists is, that NAD keeps track of in the once a month issue of the review. It tries to send to every Adventist home. But they actually get the list from local churches. It's sent up, and then it's sent back. The Adventist Church prides itself on not keeping a membership list of the General Conference.
Sure.
But yeah. You can, but it takes enormous amounts of time, enormous amounts of pressure from the GC president to get that list. But again, from local churches up, you can get it. But they don't keep it up there. They really don't want to keep it.
Yeah, but yet some of the very fine, what are they called now? Self-supporting organizations or auxiliary ministries seem to have the list because we get their fundraising pieces.
Well, they actually do a lot of Adventist employee lists.
Yeah, the other thing that's true is in because I've done some demographic. I did a study in the Washington area. On education, the future of Adventist education. There's 22,000 Adventist households in that area, and it's an aging population. Around a quarter have kids of any age. And when we were working on getting even that list to do this for the conferences, the way the regional conferences handle their lists is very different. Yeah, but it's very, very different, difficult, and it's a very different way of handling those lists for good and obvious reasons. Yeah.
What occurs to me, let me ask you this kind of quasi-technical question, Professor McBride. What about a multi-stage random sample that would go to the churches and the households within the churches as opposed to going to geographic areas? And then households within the geographic areas.
Household survey is probably the best we can do, but the household is defined because there are church lists at local areas.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, one of the things that actually you propose the Adventist Human Studies Research Association get involved with is creating that kind of data bank, so we could do these kinds of surveys.
I did suggest that, right.
And I talked to David Trim at ASTR, and he would love that kind of list also.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But at this point, there's a real opposition from local conferences. The reason why it's being among the most strong is the fear of giving that list to the higher powers, so the higher powers have direct access to the population.
All right.
The local conferences want to have that access. They want to control the information of their membership. They don't want the General Conference president to send a letter to each member of the church.
I wonder why.
But it's a local power thing. They want to keep the primary access to their membership. They don't want to give a list to the GC.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost it's a local power. They just don't want to surrender the power of access to their members.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
I didn't tell you about this, but I did check on your suggestion. That's right. What I heard back.
And I know you haven't given up either.
I think it's important for us to have this kind of representative data bank as opposed to just self-selected. We can answer a lot of these questions coming up if we can just do a probability samples
or a stratified sample of the population that we have. Yes. And these lists exist, as there's no one wants to kind of give them to us.
Well, it wouldn't surprise you that there's a fair number of officials that don't think that this kind of discussion, surveys, efforts are valuable. Yeah.
Up, so thank you so much to our presenters.
Thank you for having us.